just give us an idea of where things are and where ultimately, you know, you think they're going to go.
So the Transatlantic Trade Investment Partnership, it was launched about a year and a half ago in mid-2013, and it really is a unique, sensitive, and very complicated undertaking. It's a trade agreement between the European Union and the United States, two very large economies that, if successfully completed, would make it the U.S.'s largest free trade agreement, representing just under 50% of the world's GDP and 12% of the world's population. And it's hard to say where we are right now. Trade negotiations, as you know, take a long time to complete. There's a lot of back and forth, and I think right now we're still in the stages of setting the groundwork for the foundation of what that agreement may look like. The reason why it's so important, and there's several reasons, but if we look at the last 20 years, around between 92 and 2012, the annual value of total EU ag exports to the U.S. increased from $5.7 billion to $17.8 billion. But if we look at that same time period for the U.S. agricultural exports to the EU, they only grew from $9.7 billion to $12.1, which is significantly smaller growth than the EU had to the U.S. market. So there's this disparity, and a lot of that disparity goes beyond just the tariffs that we have on ag products with the EU. There are restrictions that the EU has on various U.S. ag products that are hindering our products from that market. So this trade agreement is going to, if successful, will allow us to address that disparity and capture a greater access for our agricultural products. It's more balanced.
Go ahead. Well, I've been reading about how the EU countries, I guess there's some movement in trying to allow them to decide whether or not they want GMO crops grown there. Is that going to be a big stumbling block or hurdle in these negotiations to try to get everybody on board with GMOs, or is that even a part of it?
That's a really good point. Just this week, the EU announced that they're willing to allow each member state to set its own restrictions on GM crops, and GM is a big area of contention in this agreement, among other issues. But there's a significant gap between the deregulation of new biotechnology products in the United States and the approval of those products in the EU, and it has significantly hindered bilateral trade of products and allowing each member state to kind of have their voice and make that decision on their own is going to significantly hinder this discussion that we want to have, that the U.S. ag industry wants to have about this gap on GM issues.
What are the other big areas of contention?
Well, there's, for example, some of the areas that the U.S. ag industry is going to be looking for in a final agreement is acceptance of, for example, U.S. meat imports of livestock being treated with non-therapeutic, antibiotic, and growth-enhancing hormones. The U.S. producers that are using these GM hormones shifting their production just to try and capture the European market. So addressing this gap here, this acceptance of these type of products treated with these antibiotics and growth hormones is going to be something that industry will be looking for. But also areas like ractopamine. The EU is the second largest market in the world for pork consumption, just under 23 million metric tons in 2012. And the U.S. is the lowest cost producer of pork in the world, so you'd think that the EU would be a large, huge market for competitively priced, high quality pork. But in 2012, under 5,000 metric tons of pork was exported. And this has to do with the EU's ban on ractopamine. It's not based on sound science or legitimate food safety concerns. It's not compliance with Codex. Codex Alimentarius, they endorsed the safety of ractopamine in July of 2012. They agreed on recommended maximum residue levels in beef and pork. But this ban that the EU has violates international standards on this, and as well as numerous provisions within the WTO SPS agreement. Another area that's come up is the U.S.'s struggle with the EU to approve the use of basic, well, essentially generally accepted and internationally recognized what we call pathogen reduction treatments and in poultry packing and processing plants. And again, this is another area where there is sound science that supports the use of these to reduce, for example, for the reduction of bacterial contamination and to promote consumer safety. But the EU has been very hesitant and against the use of such products, which is keeping poultry out of that market.
Well, given all of these disparities and these difficulties, why is the EU even wanting a free trade agreement with the U.S.?
That's a really good question. Ultimately, what it comes down to, it's an opportunity to possibly change the agricultural. Well, obviously, this trade agreement goes beyond agriculture, but specifically on agriculture, I'll speak about the potential for it to change the agricultural dynamic between these two trading partners for really the first time in decades. There are areas where the EU sees benefit, especially on the agriculture side, areas where they'd like to have greater access to the U.S. There are obviously still gains that to be made on the elimination of tariffs. While the tariffs that we do have between the two countries are fairly low, there still is obviously areas of improvement in where further tariff elimination or reduction could mean even more significant economic gains on both sides. But this agreement is so much more than tariff elimination because, as I mentioned, a significant amount of the agricultural tariff lines between these two countries are fairly low. About 76% of the U.S. tariff lines are below 5%, and then about 42% of the EU's tariff lines are 5% or less. So that's pretty low, but there is room to grow on that. But it's beyond this tariff elimination. It's about setting a new standard in trade agreements, and we're seeing this trend having been set currently in the negotiations with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this concept of a 21st century agreement that goes beyond just the elimination of import duties and TRQs. It's about a comprehensive agreement that includes all aspects of trade, not just agriculture, not just specific areas of agriculture, all goods and services. It's about reduction of the removal of unjustified non-tariff barriers, including SPS, sanitary and phytosanitary measures. It's going beyond what was already in existence with the WTO and the SPS chapter, having a means to enforce standards that can be set up on commitments to risk assessment and risk management and transparency. And there's a lot of pressure right now, even more so on the U.S. side, I think, of focusing the agriculture portion of this trade agreement on science-based measures. I think a large gap that we have right now in agriculture trade with the EU is are the differences in how the EU and the EU, the EU and the U.S. address the evaluation of food safety. The EU looks more towards what we call a precautionary principle, where it's a quote-unquote better safe than sorry. And I think this trade agreement is going to, on the agriculture side, give us, the U.S., an opportunity to, in paper, address those gaps where there are different approaches to food safety, to address how the EU takes in other factors such as cultural factors within their various countries, philosophical factors on food safety and consumer confidence within their region. And I think there is something to be said about being engaged in an agreement like this. It's going to be definitely a large undertaking, and there are benefits to the EU if there is a successful agreement, but it doesn't come without challenges, absolutely.
I did read some criticism of the process that's happening now, and it might have been more in relation to the TPP instead of this one, but of lack of transparency as the negotiations go on, lack of on the U.S. side being able to see what's actually being discussed. Are you aware of that?
So what I think you might be referring to is more of concern from the public and consumer perception of what happens behind the scenes during trade negotiations. This is a very high-level government-to-government discussion about what a final agreement could look like, and it's very large. It covers all products and services and different ways of doing business across the borders. And I think what people forget is that during any negotiation, you lose a lot of bargaining power and ability to negotiate if everything is out on the table at the same time. I think the European Union and both the U.S., they do lean on industry groups and specialists within the various industries that they're negotiating on behalf of for better information on how potential trade agreements could affect that industry. And I myself do participate in that process, and I'm providing information that comes directly from the feed industry as a whole. But I think from the consumer perspective, they miss out on that discussion because they're not part of the talks.
Okay.
But again, I think that comes down to how can you negotiate and come to the table with areas that you can and cannot concede on if you bring everything out at the front of it. So
sure. What about benefits?
But I think the EU has taken a step in opening up their proposals to the public. I think we've seen that even just last week. They released some of their specific text, proposed draft, very draft text on some parts of the agreement, and that's given an opportunity for the public to see the direction that this is going in.
Benefits, let's say this thing were inked in the next 6 months and the U.S. got, best case scenario, how is this going to help U.S. producers and, of course, the feed industry?
Well, this is a best case scenario, isn't it, 6 months from now? But for sake of where this could go, I think it could potentially be an amazing opportunity for both the feed industry and the value-added industry and the meat, milk, and eggs that could be exported to this market. I think it could level the playing field. We could be looking at a way of having a more recognized interpretation of the regulatory side for the respective countries, so that when we're exporting, we're looking at one set of regulations rather than both the exporting country and importing country. That's an ideal situation. Ideally, if we could get the EU to better recognize international standards for animal production and food for human consumption and really stick to those international guidelines and not impose their precautionary principle as excessively as they have been, there'd be a great opportunity to increase market share in the European Union and from products to open up the market in the first place. And I think that's a big point to make, because the growth of the feed industry and I think also the growth of our meat, milk, and egg production in the United States isn't going to be from growing demand in the U.S. I think it really is going to be from demand outside our border. So how can we find those markets that we can get access to continue growing our industry domestically, to continue creating jobs for our livestock industry and our grain production and oilseed production industries.
Very good. All right, Gina, I want to make sure I describe you properly in this when I do this story, and I have your title, but you said that you are involved. How would I describe your level of involvement in these negotiations?
The USDA and the USTR have trade advisory committees, and I'm on the Agricultural Trade Advisory Committee for trade in grains, feed, oil seeds, and planting seeds. And essentially what that means is these are committees made up of parties within the United States that can provide guidance and input to our negotiators, both our USTR negotiators and our support at USDA, to ensure that any agreements that the U.S. is making on behalf of those specific industries aren't going to be to the detriment of the industry, and that they fully understand what they are committing the U.S. to, that there aren't going to be any negative consequences, and that it is in the best interest of the industry as a whole. So there are several different ATACs, Agricultural Trade Advisory Committees, that touch on different sectors of the agriculture industry. Some people that participate on these committees are farmers. They have their own farm. They produce soybeans or cotton or tobacco, and some represent trade associations such as myself.